We're starting chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Felix Felicis. Harry had herbology first thing the following morning. He'd been unable to tell Ron and Hermione about his lesson to Dumbledore over breakfast for fear of being overheard, but he filled them in as they walked across the vegetable patch toward the greenhouses. The weekend's brutal wind had died out at last. The weird mist had returned, and it took them a little longer than usual to find the correct greenhouse. "Wow, scary thought, the boy, you know who," said Ron quietly, as they took their places around one of the gnarled Snargleuff stumps that formed this term's project, and began pulling on their protective gloves. "But I still don't get why Dumbledore's showing you all this. I mean, it's really interesting and everything, but what's the point?" "I don't know," said Harry, inserting a gum shield. "But he says it's all important and it'll help me survive." "I think it's fascinating," said Hermione earnestly. "It makes absolute sense to know as much about Voldemort as possible. How else will we find out his weakness?" "So how is Slughorn's latest party?" Harry asked her thickly through the gum shield. "Oh, it was quite fun, really," said Hermione, now putting on her protective goggles. "I mean, he drones on about famous ex-pupils a bit, and he absolutely fawns on McGlaggon because he's so well-connected. But he gave us some really nice food, and he introduced us to Gwenaic Jones." "Gwenaic Jones?" said Ron, his eyes widening under his own goggles. The Gwenaic Jones? Captain of the Holyhead Harpies?" "That's right," said Hermione. "Personally, I thought she was a bit full of herself, but..." "Quite enough chat over here," said Professor Sprout briskly, bustling over and looking stern. "You're lagging behind. Everyone else has started, and Neville's already got his first pod." They looked around, and sure enough, there sat Neville, with a bloody lip and several nasty scratches along the side of his face, but clutching an unpleasantly pulsating green object about the size of a grapefruit. "Okay, Professor, we're starting right now," said Ron, adding quietly when she had turned away again. "Should have used Mofletio, Harry." "No, we shouldn't," said Hermione at once, looking as she always did, intensely cross at the thought of the Half-Blood Prince and his spells. "Well, come on, we better get going." She gave the other two an apprehensive look. They all took deep breaths and then dived at the gnarled stump between them. It sprang to life at once. Long, prickly, bramble-like vines flew out of the top and whipped through the air. One tangled itself in Hermione's hair, and Ron beat it back with a pair of cicadas. Harry succeeded in trapping a couple of vines and knotting them together. A hole opened in the middle of all the tentacle-like branches. Hermione plunged her arm bravely into this hole, which closed like a trap around her elbow. Harry and Ron tugged and wrenched at the vines, forcing the hole to open again, and Hermione snatched her arm free, clutching in her fingers a pod, just like Neville's. At once the prickly vines shot back inside, and the gnarled stump sat there, looking like an innocent dead lump of wood. "You know, I don't think I'll be having any of these in my garden when I've got my own place," said Ron, pushing his goggles up onto his forehead and wiping sweat from his face. "Pass me a bowl," said Hermione, holding out a pulsating pod at arm's length. Harry handed one over, and she dropped the pod into it with a look of disgust on her face. "Don't be squeamish. Squeeze it out. They're best when they're fresh," called Professor Sprout. "Anyway," said Hermione, continuing their interrupted conversation, as though a lump of wood had not just attacked them. "Slughorn's going to have a Christmas party, Harry, and there's no way he'll be able to wriggle out of this one because he actually asked me to check your free evenings so he can be sure to have a night that you can come." Harry groaned. Meanwhile, Ron, who was attempting to burst the pod in the bowl by putting both hands on it, standing up and squashing it as hard as he could, said angrily, "And this is another party just for Slughorn's favorites, is it?" "Just for the Slug Club, yes," said Hermione. The pod flew out from under Ron's fingers and hit the greenhouse glass, rebounding onto the back of Professor Sprout's head and knocking off her old patched hat. Harry went to retrieve the pod, and when he got back, Hermione was saying, "Look, I didn't make up the name Slug Club." "Slug Club," repeated Ron with a sneer worthy of Malfoy. "It's pathetic. Well, I hope you enjoy your party. Why don't you try hooking up with McGlaggon? Then Slughorn can make you King and Queen Slug." "We're allowed to bring guests," said Hermione, who for some reason had turned a bright, boiling scarlet. "And I was going to ask you to come, but if you think it's that stupid, then I won't bother." Harry suddenly wished the pod had flown a little farther, that he needed not have been sitting here with a pair of them. Unnoticed by either, he seized a bowl that contained the pod and began to try to open it by the noisiest and most energetic means he could think of. Unfortunately, he could still hear every word of their conversation. "You were going to ask me?" asked Ron, in a completely different voice. "Yes," said Hermione angrily. "But obviously, if you'd rather I hooked up with McLagan..." There was a pause while Harry continued to pound the resilient pod with a trowel. "No, I wouldn't," said Ron, in a very quiet voice. Harry missed the pod, hit the bowl, and shattered it. "Riparo," he said hastily, poking the pieces with his wand, and the bowl sprang back together again. The crash, however, appeared to have woken Ron and Hermione to Harry's presence. Hermione looked flustered and immediately started fussing about for her copy of Flesh-Eating Trees of the World, to find the correct way to juice Snarglefuff pods. Ron, on the other hand, looked sheepish, but also rather pleased with himself. "Hand that over, Harry," said Hermione hurriedly. "It says we're supposed to puncture them with something sharp." Harry passed her the pod and the bowl. He and Ron snapped their goggles back over their eyes and dived once more for the stump. It was not as though he was really surprised, thought Harry, as he wrestled with a thorny vine intent upon throttling him. He had an inkling that this might happen sooner or later, but he was not sure how he felt about it. He and Cho were now too embarrassed to look at each other, let alone talk to each other. What if Ron and Hermione started going out together and then split up? Could their friendship survive it? Harry remembered the few weeks where they had not been talking to each other in the third year. He had not enjoyed trying to bridge the distance between them. And then what if they didn't split up? What if they became like Bill and Fleur, and it became excruciatingly embarrassing to be in their presence, so that he was shut out for good? "Gotcha," yelled Ron, pulling a second pod from the stump, just as Hermione managed to burst the first one open, so that the bowl was full of tubers wriggling like pale green worms. The rest of the lesson passed without further mention of Slughorn's party. Although Harry watched his two friends more closely over the next few days, Ron and Hermione did not seem any different, except that they were a little politer to each other than usual. Harry supposed he would just have to wait and see what happened under the influence of butterbeer in Slughorn's dimly lit room on the night of the party. In the meantime, however, he had more pressing worries. Katie Bell was still in St. Mungo's Hospital, with no prospect of leaving, which meant that the promising Gryffindor team Harry had been training so carefully since September was one chaser short. He kept putting off replacing Katie in the hopes that she would return, but their opening match against Slytherin was looming, and he finally had to accept that she would not be back in time to play. Harry did not think he could stand another full house tryout. With a sinking feeling that had little to do with Quidditch, he cornered Dean Thomas after Transfiguration one day. Most of the class had already left, although several twittering yellow birds were still zooming around the room, all of Hermione's creation. Nobody else had succeeded in conjuring so much as a feather from thin air. "Are you still interested in playing Chaser?" "What? Yeah, of course," said Dean excitingly. Over Dean's shoulder, Harry saw Seamus Finnegan slamming his books into his bag, looking sour. One of the reasons why Harry would have preferred not to have to ask Dean to play was that he knew Seamus would not like it. On the other hand, he had to do what was best for the team, and Dean had outflown Seamus at the tryouts. "Well, then you're in," said Harry. "There's a practice tonight, 7 o'clock. "Right," said Dean. "Cheers, Harry. Blimey, I can't wait to tell Ginny." He sprinted out of the room, leaving Harry and Seamus alone together. An uncomfortable moment made no easier when a bird dropping landed on Seamus's head as one of Hermione's canaries whizzed over them. Seamus was not the only person disgruntled by the choice of Katie's substitute. There was much muttering in the common room about the fact that Harry had now chosen two of his classmates for the team, as Harry had endured much worse mutterings than this in his school careers. He was not particularly bothered, but all the same, the pressure was increasing to provide a win in the upcoming match against Slytherin. If Gryffindor won, Harry knew that the whole house would forget that they had criticized him and swear that they had always known it was a great team. If they lost, well, Harry thought wryly, he had still endured worse mutterings. Harry had no reason to regret his choice once he saw Dean fly that evening. He worked well with Ginny and Demelza. The beaters, Peaks, and Coot were getting better all the time. The only problem was Ron. Harry had known all along that Ron was an inconsistent player who suffered from nerves and a lack of confidence. And unfortunately, the looming prospect of the opening game of the season seemed to have brought out all of his old insecurities. After letting in half a dozen goals, most of them scored by Ginny, his technique became wilder and wilder, until he finally punched an oncoming Demelza Robbins in the mouth. "It was an accident. I'm sorry, Demelza, really sorry," Ron shouted after her as she zigzagged back to the ground, dripping blood everywhere. "I just..." "Panicked," said Ginny angrily, landing next to Demelza and examining her fat lip. "You prat, Ron. Look at the state of her." "I can fix that," said Harry, landing beside the two girls, pointing his wand at Demelza's mouth and saying, "Episki." "And Ginny, don't call Ron a prat. You're not the captain of this team." "Well, you seem too busy to call him a prat, and I thought someone should." Harry forced himself not to laugh. "In the air, everyone, let's go." Overall, it was one of the worst practices they had as a team, though Harry did not feel that honesty was the best policy when they were this close to the match. "Great work, everyone. I think we'll flatten Slytherin," he said bracingly, as the chasers and beaters left the changing room looking reasonably happy with themselves. "I played like a sack of dragon dung," said Ron in a hollow voice when the door had swung shut behind Ginny. "No, you didn't," said Harry firmly. "You're the best keeper I tried out, Ron. Your only problem is nerves." He kept up a relentless flow of encouragement all the way back to the castle, but by the time they reached the second floor, Ron was looking marginally more cheerful. When Harry pushed open the tapestry to take their usual shortcut up to Gryffindor Tower, however, they found themselves looking at Dean and Ginny, who were locked in a close embrace and kissing fiercely as though glued together. It was as though something large and scaly had erupted in Harry's stomach, clawing at his insides. Hot blood seemed to flood his brain so that all thought was extinguished, replaced by a savage urge to jinx Dean into jelly. Wrestling with this sudden madness, he heard Ron's voice, as though from a great distance away. "Oi!" Dean and Ginny broke apart and looked around. "What?" said Ginny. "I don't want to find my own sister snogging people in public." "This was a deserted corridor till you came butting in," said Ginny. Dean was looking embarrassed. He gave Harry a shifty grin that Harry did not return, as the newborn monster inside him was roaring for Dean's instant dismissal from the team. "Come on, Ginny," said Dean. "Let's go back to the common room." "You go," said Ginny. "I want a word with my dear brother." Dean left, looking as though he was not sorry to depart the scene. "Right," said Ginny, tossing her long red hair out of her face and glaring at Ron. "Let's get this straight once and for all. It is none of your business who I go out with or what I do with them, Ron." "Yeah, it is," said Ron just as angrily. "Do you think I want people saying my sister's a..." "A what?" shouted Ginny, drawing her wand. "A what, exactly?" "He doesn't mean anything, Ginny," said Harry automatically, though the monster was roaring its approval of Ron's words. "Oh, yes, he does," she said, flaring up at Harry. "Just because he's never snogged anyone in his life. Just because the best kiss he's ever had is from our Auntie Muriel." "Shut your mouth," bellowed Ron, bypassing red and turning maroon. "No, I will not," yelled Ginny, beside herself. "I've seen you with Phlegm, hoping she'll kiss you on the cheek every time you see her. It's pathetic. If you got out and got a bit of snogging done yourself, you wouldn't mind so much that everyone else does it." Ron had pulled out his wand too. Harry stepped swiftly between them. "You don't know what you're talking about," Ron roared, trying to get a clear shot at Ginny around Harry, who was now standing in front of her with his arms outstretched. "Just because I don't do it in public." Ginny screamed with derisive laughter, trying to push Harry out of the way. "Been kissing Pidwiggin, have you? Or have you got a picture of Auntie Muriel stashed under your pillow?" "You..." A streak of orange light flew under Harry's left arm and missed Ginny by inches. Harry pushed Ron up against the wall. "Don't be stupid." "Harry snogged Cho Chang," shouted Ginny, who sounded close to tears now. "And Hermione snogged Victor Crumb. It's only you who acts like it's something disgusting, Ron. And that's because you've got about as much experience as a 12-year-old. And with that, she stormed away. Harry quickly let go of Ron. The look on his face was murderous. They both stood there, breathing heavily, until Mrs. Norris, Filch's cat, appeared around the corner, which broke the tension. "Come on," said Harry, at the sound of Filch's shuffling feet reached their ears. They hurried up the stairs and along the 7th floor corridor. "Out of the way," Ron barked at a small girl, who jumped in fright and dropped a bottle of toad spawn. Harry hardly noticed the sound of shattering glass. He felt disoriented, dizzy, being struck by a lightning bolt that must be something like this. "It's just because she's Ron's sister," he told himself. You just didn't like seeing her kissing Dean because she's Ron's sister. But unbidden into his mind came an image of that same deserted corridor with himself kissing Ginny instead. The monster in his chest purred, but then he saw Ron ripping open the tapestry curtain and drawing his wand on Harry, shouting things like, "Betrayal of trust and supposed to be my friend." "Do you think Hermione did snog Crumb?" Ron asked abruptly as they approached the fat lady. Harry gave a guilty start and wrenched his imagination away from a corridor in which no Ron intruded, in which he and Ginny were quite alone. "What?" he said confusedly. The honest answer was yes, but he did not want to give it. Ron, however, seemed to gather the worst from the look on Harry's face. "Dilly grout," he said darkly to the fat lady, and they climbed through the portrait hole into the common room. Neither of them mentioned Ginny or Hermione again. Indeed, they barely spoke to each other that evening and got into bed in silence, each absorbed in his own thoughts. Harry lay awake for a long time, looking up at the canopy of his four-poster and trying to convince himself that his feelings for Ginny were entirely elder-brotherly. They had lived, had they not, like brother and sister all summer, playing Quidditch, teasing Ron, having a laugh about Bill and Flem. He had known Ginny for years now. It was natural he should feel protective. Natural he should want to look out for her, want to rip Dean limb from limb for kissing her. No, he would have to control that particularly brotherly feeling. Ron gave a great grunting snore. "She's Ron's sister," Harry told himself firmly. "Ron's sister. She's out of bounds." He would not risk his friendship with Ron for anything. He punched his pillow into a more comfortable shape and waited for sleep to come, trying his utmost not to allow his thoughts to stray anywhere near Ginny. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my beautiful baby kitten. And I hope you're already asleep. Sweet dreams, darling girl. I love you so much. Good night.